Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Happy Monday. I hope you've had an interesting and intellectually profitable week, and you are all ready down our online public house to have some intellectual and discussion, which soon degenerates into just talking bollocks. So cheers, everybody. Cheers, Paul. Cheers, Lipton. Cheers, Alex and Birdie, or Birdie and Alex.
Scrub your nan.
Capis, Saludo, Proust, Prost,
Skull. L'chaim.
Yep, that one.
Next slander. Year in Jerusalem.
Yep, that's where Paul is and where he is funded from. Yakidar, Slanger, and Slangervar.
Nazrovya.
And Turbisexy. And welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, online public house. It's on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss based research, interesting stuff going on in the news and whatever, from the kind of free thinking perspective that is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities and indeed life in general. So, hello, everybody, and cheers and goedavond. Goedavond, hoe gaat het met jou, meneer? Hoe gaat het met jou? Goedavond, ik hoop dat alles wel met jou. I did a speech in Finnish at the weekend. It was violent. It was very nice. Yes. About it. They pretended to understand and everything. And it was violent. Anyway, we have some very special guests for you today. We have for the first time in the history of the Jolly Heretic, we have a power couple. We have a power couple on the dissident right wing sphere. And so I would ask them to Birdie, you would have met before, but you haven't met Mr. Birdie before. So I'll ask them to introduce themselves. So say hello. Who's going to take charge? Probably Alex, Patrick, and all that. Alex.
Yeah, go on. I'll say first as I'm the man. Yes. We are Alex, that steamboat guy, and Birdie. Birdie obviously has been on the Jolly Heretic before. I think I've been on with you, Ed, before, but back in AA's UO days. Actually a long time ago. So yes, it's lovely to finally be invited on, even as a plus one.
I would invite you on separately in a recorded interview at some point in the coming months. But I just thought today I contacted Birdie because I've had Birdie on before, and then I thought, well, why not both? Wouldn't that be, well, Birdie actually suggested it. And I thought, well, that's a brilliant idea. Like, it's avant-garde, it's not been done before.
It's a good idea.
And
codependent. Birdie,
sorry?
It's codependent.
Oh,
it's called it marriage. That's
marriage. Surely their marriage hasn't become codependent already. Surely Alex's narcissism is not that extreme. And then Birdie, could you say hello?
Hello.
There you go. That's
hello.
And before we get on to some things we're going to discuss, Alex and Birdie do a lot of kind of civic stuff for the cause of keeping England, keeping the essence of England alive, don't you, Alex?
We do indeed, yeah. In fact, just yesterday was the annual general meeting of our Village Allotment Association, of which I'm the chairman and Birdie's the secretary. We had it in the barn we've just had built on the site, which was all very lovely. And of course, it went exactly as every village committee meeting has ever gone before. We ended up in a massive argument over lawnmowers. With an objectionable South African lady.
Alex, sorry to interrupt, but isn't that a conflict of interest, the treasurer and the chair? This could lead to corruption at allotment levels.
No, it's chairman and secretary, it's fine.
Sorry, it's chairman and secretary, but that's financial misdoings, yeah. Right there.
We had this on my local Conservative Party ward committee when I was 17. There was this couple in their 70s called Ron and Joyce Davis. And of course, you know, they always back each other up. They always support each other as well. And this meant that things could swing their way. You know, that's a couple taking things over. But anyway, we'll see how that goes.
Alex is smuggling plant pot.
I'm sure he's voting in favour of Birdie's interests. But anyway, cheers, everybody, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. No, there's no swinging involved, J. Graham World. No, there's not. Paul's in a different house. He's not in. We're doing this online. Paul and Lipton. Lipton is in his mansion in California, as you can see, from Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto 6, of course, coming out this year, Lipton. I'm in Finland and everything's fine with the world. So what should we start with? Paul, you've pushed a number of interesting things my way. One of the things that was the idea of mentals getting the vote.
Yeah, Scottish mentals, which, as I pointed out off camera, one of those words is redundant. But the SNP have decided to give people who are certifiably insane and being treated by mental health professionals the vote. I think the obvious interpretation would be because a disproportionate number of certifiably insane people tend to vote SNP. So it's a bit self-serving and quite a wonderful idea, if you ask me.
But that was my understanding. That I didn't know if they continued to enforce that, but that you couldn't vote if you were a lord, you couldn't vote if you were if you were in prison, and you couldn't vote if you were certifiably insane.
I mean, but they have to let people in prison vote, otherwise half the SNP senior team wouldn't be allowed to vote.
Yeah, this is seeming, well, certainly the Nicola Sturgeon's yes. If you're in a psychiatric institution, if you're sectioned, you're allowed to vote.
I sent you the article. Did you read it? Because I've forgotten. I was laughing too much.
No, I did read it, and I was what I did there was I was pushing that to you so somebody could comment on it. I'll move over to Bernie. Ladies first. Mental's getting the vote, Bernie. This is going to mean we're just going to get more left wing politicians.
Utterly ridiculous. I mean, it's almost as bad as saying 16-year-olds should have the vote. If you asked 16-year-old self, what would I do? You know, looking back, I was a child. Mm. It's ridiculous. I unfortunately have the sad tale of I have to work with a lot of Zoomers. Quite a lot of them are 16. Some of them are in the mental category. And there is no way in hell I would give them the vote. I mean, they can't even do their job properly, tie their bloody shoelaces, let alone vote for something and actually have a genuine opinion. If they're actually being treated in a facility, should we say, the chances are they're on medication. Now, the medication is going to change the way their thought processes work. So does that really count as them voting, or are they being persuaded elsewhere? Are they being persuaded
You're opening up a very interesting can of
antidepressants. I was going to say, could you say the same about women on SSRIs?
Yeah.
But more basically, Alex, what about... But Birdie, what about people in Scotland on average are self-medicated with industrial amounts of whiskey? Wouldn't that count?
Well, I mean, I'd say that was more based than...
whiskey helps.
But then, Bernie, then should women be allowed to vote when they're ovulating?
I mean, I'm going to be incredibly based now. I have never voted. Ever.
Well, you mean Alex?
Alex won't let you.
He would say, Bernie, I'll get tired tonight, love. Could you go to the polling station and vote for the British National Party for me, please? I can't
deal with it.
Bernie, do your family vote?
Not really, no.
No, you don't practice family voting, because that is the trend.
No, my parents don't.
No.
They don't get involved at all. They don't.
But doesn't Alex just tell you what to vote?
Pretty much, yeah. I just let him do his own thing.
No. Bernie is actually the ultimate in right-wing women, where she thinks that all politics is stupid and should be left to her husband.
It's true.
But I mean, that was what my grandmother used to say. I said to her, what do you vote? And she said, oh, I vote whatever he tells me to, meaning my grandfather.
Yeah, I don't have time to think about politics. That's not my issue. That's your problem.
Yeah.
I'm busy doing other things.
It's division of labour.
Yeah, making it's division jam. Of labour. There you go.
it sounds wonderful. You're such a lucky man. Imagine having a wife that doesn't think for herself. I mean,
Oh no, she does plenty of that. It's just around different things.
Yeah.
At the moment, the pet project is what colour is the kitchen going to be?
Oh no, that's already chosen. I'm in the middle of painting the kitchen. True, yeah. He went to London, came back, and half the kitchen was redone.
Yeah.
Lipton, are you okay? You haven't tried to seduce Birdie yet. It's quite out of character.
I remember Birdie from some time ago. She was a guest by herself. Her husband was not present at that time.
Did you sweet talk her like the other female guest?
Was that other female guest? She was. Yeah. She's married. I didn't know. Ayadin is married.
Oh no! You wasted breath talking to her. Wasted cannabis on her.
In our experience, most of the right wing are scared of you.
No. Yeah. Great.
But the only conversation you get out of them at the Witan is, where's your husband?
I sat with Birdie and Alex at the Witan.
But do you know what's paradoxical about Birdie? She's a confident woman. Submissive women are smart and confident. Women don't need to be politically active to be important. Look at her. She's not intimidated. She's not bothered.
Yes, she's like the wife of Garth. He's given her maestry, and then that's it. It all stems from there. Or in the Wife of Bath's Tale, the kind of witch, which is called the something lady. What's it called in the Wife of Bath's Tale? Something lady. And she says, I can either be loyal to you, but I'll be an ugly old woman forever, an ugly old crone, or I can shag around and I'll be beautiful. Which do you want? And he said, you make the decision. And then she becomes beautiful and doesn't shag around because he gave her maestry. Very important, this maestry. Lipton, Mental's getting the vote.
Yeah, I heard Paul commenting on that travesty. Personally, I think the franchise should be limited. We know that we have had this conversation before. Some people shouldn't vote. If we want to enhance the quality of democracy, only a select percentage of the population should vote.
Well, quite right. It used to be that if you went to university, you had two votes, didn't you? You had the vote from your constituency where you lived, and you had the vote for the Scottish Combined Universities constituency, or the Oxford and Cambridge constituency.
Now, if you go to university, you should have your vote taken away from you. I don't want to preempt the later discussion.
I would argue that you should. In a sense, you should. You're not paying tax for a start. If you're at university, you're probably not paying tax. So your AHRB grant is tax free. So you're not contributing anything to society. So I can see the argument should be in a vote. But it's a good question, isn't it, Lipton? The idea that if we say that you've got to be compos mentis to vote, or you've got to be like in some sense yourself to vote, then surely if you're taking like antipsychotics or something, or you are psychotic, either way, it's going to alter your character. And so shouldn't that preclude you?
Yes, look. Bureaucrats should not vote, lobbies should not vote, people on welfare should not vote.
That rules out most of the UK, Lipton.
Probably some people should not vote based on their education levels, but voting is not a right and shouldn't be universal.
Oh, no, I completely agree. I think that voting should be, if you pay tax, and then you should be allowed to vote, unless you work for the state, which unfortunately is about 40% of people. So those people, of course, shouldn't be allowed to vote. That's why what's his name? Anthony Trollope. He worked for the post office, so he couldn't vote. He was very annoyed by this. But this was back when the state was tiny and hardly anyone could vote. All these people can vote, policemen and teachers and all these people that are just civil servants, basically. It's appalling. So we agree. Paul, do you have any further thoughts on the issue of mentals being allowed to vote?
Apart from, I think we should annex Scotland, but apart from that, no.
No, it's completely ludicrous. So we've agreed on that. Excellent. We've agreed on it. We've made a, like the Quakers. We haven't had a vote, but we've just agreed. And that's that. The Holy Spirit has told us that that's the case. Excellent. We'll move on. Right. Now, the next thing we were going to talk about, Paul, it gets back to the voting issue. You sent this to me. So in Finland, interesting evidence has come out. Because they keep records of, you know, your nationality and what you contribute. And they've worked out that the argument for mass immigration is, it's very important for the economy. But if you look at third world immigration, with the exception of a few outliers, and there are a few outliers, it's costly to the economy. And in the case of Somalis, be careful what you say, because I want to leave the video up. It's 280 Finns are required to fund the lifetime of one Somali in Finland.
Yeah, let me speak my turn. So I've been wanting to talk about this for a long time. Immigrants are a drain on public resources in Denmark, Germany, the UK, Sweden, and Finland. The Somalians, they're also a drain on public resources in the Netherlands. There was a study that was published around 2 years ago with data on people from Somalia. Not only are those people are drawing on public resources, they're likely to commit crimes, especially sexual crimes. And we have good data on sexual criminality in the UK. And the people who are committing these crimes, most of them are not white men. They're from Islamic countries, and some are Somalians.
Yes, they seem to be. I mean, I enjoyed my Somali meal in Haringey with a load of my friends in September last year. I did. I liked lamb with spicy rice and pasta. It tasted nice. But there's very few of them. They don't seem to be really into the old restaurants. You know, in Finland, I don't know of any Somali restaurants. And there's enough Somalis in Oulu that I would think there should be some, but they don't seem to do anything. They don't seem to. I don't know whether it's this clannishness, this idea that they only have to be pro-social to members of their own clan, but they seem to be uniquely unintegrated and non-contributory. Paul, any thoughts?
And they're probably too busy all day claiming benefits to actually do any cooking. That would be another major factor. But I think, debates about the economic aspects of immigration haven't really been discussed in the past as much as they should have. And when they have, there's been this gaslighting going on. I've saw it years ago. There were loads of discussions where it was just taken as a truism that immigration helped the economy. It does, to the extent with declining birth rates. You know, it's like a Ponzi scheme. You just keep importing people. The problem is they grow old and become a burden on the NHS. Then you've got the positive, because, of course, everyone in the dinghies is either a doctor or an engineer. They theoretically would contribute to the society, except there is whistleblowers in the NHS are being increasingly in trouble for reporting on language issues in the NHS, doctors malpractice, making loads of errors because they don't speak good English. You'd think with medication and so on, getting the dosage right, being able to communicate clearly would be the basis of any beginning of medical care. But, you know, that's an issue in the NHS. There's also the issue, I'm sorry to go on a slight tangent, but one of the arguments is, they contribute to the NHS, lots of foreign overseas people. We're taking doctors from the developing parts of the world that actually need doctors who've trained those doctors. So it's unethical from that point of view. But the article you're actually talking about, it just lays out quite clearly the gap between, for example, I think it was a German immigrant to Finland is about a positive €5,500 a year, whereas a Somali was at -7,500 euros, something like that.
Yeah.
So there's just different types of immigrant, and that never gets discussed because it's racist.
Right, and the immigration, even from other African countries, there's some degree to which the immigration from Nigeria was economic. So there's some degree to which what you get in Nigeria is what you get everywhere, which is the people that are really rich, they don't want to immigrate. Why should they? They're really rich. The people that are at the bottom, they don't want to. They can't immigrate. They're too stupid. It's the people in the middle that emigrate. And that's what's been going on in Nigeria. Whereas with Somalia, it was just refugees. It was just random, according to what part of the country they were in. So there's that issue as well. But yeah, they just don't. It's a fascinating. It's a conundrum. It's just certain reasons I can't explain on here. But it's clear they're a complete drain on the society.
Isn't it kicking off in California now? Because I understand in Minneapolis and Minnesota there was the whole Somali thing there, but there are other immigrant groups in California that have been exposed recently for doing scams on medical facilities. And I think when the full picture comes out of the billions of dollars that have been scammed, you'd hope something would be done about it, but who knows?
No, there is, you think about that, they say the jobs we won't do. Well, we used to do those jobs. We used to do those jobs. Back when you didn't have this nonsense of everybody going to university or whatever, people used to get themselves a trade. You know, there's no question of going to university for most people. You train to do something useful. All these people train to do something completely unuseful. And then anyway, I'll pass on to Alex. What are your thoughts on this?
I was going to say, there's a couple of things here. So I think over the last week, I saw somebody who had plotted the Danish data on net economic contribution against the British data for how rapey they were. And essentially, it was a straight line, was just the more they cost the taxpayer, the rapier they are, with Somalians and Afghanis up in the top corner. So that is one thing that could just be.
Are there any? But it would have been a scatter graph. Though. It would have been a scatter graph. So were there any outliers where they contribute a lot of money and they're very rapey?
No,
Like, they, yeah. In a way, they pay for their rapes.
Yes. No, we pay for their rapes. The ones who sort of contribute the most were people like Danes, but all Danes are lovely. So there was no issue there.
I never liked Sandy's hot Toxvig.
They're very
noise sensitive, Alex. I once arrived very late at our package holiday thing, me and my family in the Canary Islands, and the children were young, very young at the time, and they were tired and they were noisy, and obviously, and there was this knock at the door, and this guy says, "Excuse me, can you keep the noise down? It's quite late." And I literally just looked at him and was like, "Yeah, you wouldn't be Danish, would you?" And he said, "Yes." Why do you say that? I said, "That's just a guess." They're very noise sensitive. I mean, I'm noise sensitive, but the Danish people are very. I was once coughing in the street in Denmark, and in a village, and someone opened the window and went at me. Shut the door. They really hate noise.
Well, Ed, I have a quick point to make again, because I want us to stay on topic. This issue is super important. In the 1960s, some researchers decided that they wanted data on the preferences and personalities of African immigrants in the U.S. The immigrants who were studying in the U.S., their average grade was a B-. But then, America had a more selective immigration system, so people who migrated from the developing world tended to be better educated and they did well in school. But these immigrants, the African elites, they found it weird that American students were, not American students, but Americans had a pride when they conducted menial jobs, because based on their position, it was strange for people to engage in menial work. Probably they were from the elite. But this underscores a broader point. As somebody who's an immigrant, I was born in Jamaica, went to school and university in Jamaica, lived there well into my 20s. I can tell you that in a country like the UK or the US, people are professional. So if you are a garbage man, that is your profession. Okay. If you work at a store, that is your profession and you respect your job. The idea of a menial job is indeed real, but even if your position is menial, you're expected to do the relevant courses and be a professional. Whereas in Jamaica,
this is a professionalism.
Let me continue, Ed. In developing countries, you are professional if you are a doctor or an attorney, and even when you're professional, you still don't perform at a high level. So foreigners, they find it weird that Westerners work so hard even when they're in menial jobs.
Brilliant. Birdie, do you have any thoughts on this topic that we're discussing? I've forgotten what it was. What was it now? Yes. What were we on? Lipton thrown me completely. What were we talking about?
If you had a stroke, Ed.
No, I just can't remember what it was we were talking about. Alex and Birdie seem to have frozen. They're frozen.
I think they're bored.
They're either very bored to the extent that they've become waxworks, or they've actually become petrified.
Wouldn't it be funny if they're just very good at staying still?
Imagine how good. Look how still they are. Well,
Ruin the illusion.
They've ruined the illusion. It's obvious that there's different. There's different kinds of immigrant. But
can I share a story? I was in. It builds on what Lipton was saying. I went to a conference in Seoul, in South Korea, and on the coach on the way to Seoul from the airport, we stopped off for a comfort break and went into the gents' toilet. And you know the tall urinals, the all-in-one tall ones. There was a guy on his knees with like gardening knee pads. No, it's not going where you think it's going, Ed. And he basically had a large toothbrush and he was scrubbing with incredible diligence the base of the urinal. And there's people on either side of him whizzing away. And I just thought, and he didn't seem particularly miserable. I just thought, what dedication to the art of urinal cleaning was that?
Well, if you think they're a much more intelligent country than us, so you could imagine that. Hello, that even they've changed sides now, like the Italians in the war. But even a person that's a urinal cleaner in a country like that probably has an IQ of 100. Mm. So you can see how it's going to be reflected in the, and then of course the modal personality traits are different. So you can see how you know, they're going to be very, very committed to it. That's what even you find in Finland, even though there's like 3-point difference between us and them, you don't get the same level of yobbishness here.
Well, they probably structured it as well that he had to keep performing at a high level, otherwise you'd have to clean the main toilets, and that's obviously the lower performing toilet cleaner.
Well, if it was Japan, I don't know about Korea, but if it was Japan, they'd have really serious punishments which you'd have to accept or lose your job. So if you are like a minute late as a train driver, then they make you go on a course for a few months where they basically psychologically torture you. Did you know that?
No. Yes, I did not know that, but I have a quick point. Apparently in Japan, there was a strike, and being intelligent people, the bus drivers, decided that they were not going to collect fares from the passengers because they wanted to hurt their employers, not the passengers. In Jamaica, when there's a strike, these idiot transportation workers attack passengers physically. 75.08 over 100. Big difference.
Yes, it is a big difference. So, Birdie, before you were literally petrified, I did, as you did, it will, as when you watch this back, it will be attested to that you were both turned by the by Jadis in Narnia, you know, into stone.
Lot's wife be a better example, Ed, for theological man like yourself?
Well, sort of. I mean, C.S. Lewis was a theologian. I mean, but anyway, fine. You were turned into salt like Lot's wife because you did look back and you were told not to look back, except you didn't look back. That's why my example was better. did you have any particular opinion on what we were talking about immigration and different peoples and stuff like that? Any Molly's. Anecdotes?
Molly's. Well, from what we did catch, you might have noticed our Wi-Fi went down. It cut out quite a bit. From coming from a personal perspective, I suppose, being down at the bottom of the country as we are, we don't really see it. Honestly, we don't.
No.
Not like that. And the running joke is that, because I work in the hospitality sector, and I have been personally blamed for this before. I have been blamed for there not being enough diversity in the area we're in.
Well, that's because you keep racially tormenting them in the car park.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
No, okay.
I'm sorry, buddy. How is it your fault personally that there's not enough diversity?
So, it was a case of they just don't want to come down here. It is the countryside. They don't want to be here. It is not their scene. There is no convenience anywhere. They don't get paid to be here, putting it bluntly. Now, we as a very small community kept getting comments passed that we were the ones driving them out. We weren't welcoming enough. Now,
Birdie, the burning cross on your front allotment is slightly off-putting.
Yeah, I think it might be, yeah.
It's the pointy hat.
Must be. And of course, we laughed at this because those who have visited us have all said the opposite. It is a very friendly village. It's a friendly community, even further out across to the neighbouring villages. We all look after each other, etc., etc., etc. Now, you go into town, either of the towns, and there has been a sudden influx of Somali. They are Somalis? No, Ugandans. No, who are they? I
think they're Ugandans.
Ugandans? I don't know.
Something like that.
But it's been really obvious. There were suddenly big, big groups of them, and they were all men. I didn't see any women.
No, I have seen it. No, Sanostal's been used as a dumping ground for migration overflow.
Yeah.
Truro, because it's got the Royal Cornwall Hospital, is being used as a seed because they're using the NHS to get these people jobs. As I'm sure you said, you know, they work as healthcare workers on fraudulent visas because they've all lied on their application forms because, you know, Nigerian health education is a complete joke. So you do see them. I've seen them on back roads doing 15 miles an hour in a clapped out Nissan Micra because they're using them as healthcare visitor workers to a lot of the older people around here. Obviously, the demographic's quite senior in the villages. So, yes, I have noticed them in the village, and that's how they seem to be
the fervor of multiculturalism. They've noticed there are these areas that don't have it yet. So yeah. they must be punished. They must be
led.
It's not that they're necessarily being punished. It's they're seeding the diversity
using
the public sector.
But one of the ironies is it's actually racist if you think about it, because in the countryside, for example, South Asian people tend to have quite extended families. There'll be elderly parents that they're often very close to. The idea that South Asians, because I live in the countryside in a very hilly area, the idea that a South Asian family wants to come out on a Sunday in a big people carrier and drag their sari-wearing mother up a hill is hilarious. But it's only someone who's obsessed with diversity could be racist enough not to know anything about South Asians and their habits and decide that there aren't enough South Asians in the countryside. If you actually ask South Asians, they might say, we don't want to go to the countryside.
There's no great Mirpuri tradition of hiking.
Yeah.
No, they just don't do it.
I've been to the Indian countryside, and living in the Indian countryside, you know, it's not very high status. It's not the thing that you do if you're a wealthy Indian. You get the hell out of the countryside. And I imagine they retain those kinds of attitudes as well, which is that the countryside, if you go to a village in Rajasthan, on the edge of the village, you've got people living in mud huts. I'm not exaggerating, literal mud huts. Women walking along, carrying things on their heads, and all of this kind of thing. So the countryside for them, I don't think it's considered to be a particularly cool place to be. You know,
what you call a Indian in a skip?
I want to keep this up on YouTube.
Rummaging.
I agree, Ed. Unlike you, Paul, and Birdie and their husband, I am from a developing country, so I have a special perspective. And in Jamaica, it's an urban country, but the Jamaican definition of urbanization is quite weird, because many of the rural cities are not glamorous. But when you are from a developing country, life is really in a rich urban area. Nobody wants to live somewhere in the country.
No, exactly. I can't even name any Jamaican town other than Kingston.
Yeah, nobody cares about the country.
I suppose it's because in a developing country, of course, if you're in the countryside, it's because you're a farm labourer.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like in this country. Even, you know, we're in the deep countryside here. There's only half a dozen farmers.
Yeah.
If that,
and also the countryside. If you go back historically, go back to Tudor England or whatever. I can talk a bit about that. I've done research on it. The countryside was incredibly dangerous. The countryside was not really under the control of the state. It was under the control, basically, of warlords. Very genteel warlords, but it was warlords. You know, they called them retinues, but it was basically protection rackets. The battle with each other for control and things like that. And there'd be highwaymen and there'd be all, it was a really dangerous place, the countryside. Whereas the towns, at least that was under the control of the government and there was a certain degree of safety. So that's what it's like in rural India as well. Now, like, it's not safe. It's not a safe place. It's not controlled, but the government don't really control it. You're miles from bloody anywhere. So it's just a way of rubbing people's noses in diversity and pissing them off, I think. But yeah, okay.
The name of the organization, is it Suomen Perusta?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read them a few months ago.
You mean the organization did the thing on the Finnish welfare?
Yes. Suomen Perusta.
How'd you pronounce it?
It's
Suomen Perusta. It's like Finnish basic or something. Peros, to Finnish establishment, Finnish basic. Peros is basis.
It's quite arousing when you pronounce Finnish.
I feel like your
driving instructor did.
So you give me a license, as it were. Paul, who can't drive, is convinced that I only got my driving license by fellating my Finnish driving instructor, which is not true. In reality, I got it because I was very good at driving and I sang Bohemian Rhapsody during the driving test because he told me to. So I was humming. As I was driving, and he commented on this, and I said, "Well, I can sing if you like." And he said, "I would like that you sing Bohemian Rhapsody." And then we did. We both sang Bohemian Rhapsody while we drove along. And then we got to a bit where it was quite a narrow bridge. And I explained to him, we're going to have to stop singing Bohemian Rhapsody here because I have to concentrate. I think he likes that. That was a good move.
Yeah.
Yes. So right, moving on.
I think that's more embarrassing than if you actually had filleted him.
Well, no. I think we both enjoyed it. I passed my driving test, albeit with the driving test equivalent of about a C. It was a driving test, you know, 2-2, but it was nevertheless acceptable. How was your driving test, Alex?
I got 5 minors on my actual driving test, but I only got 1 when I took it on a steamroller.
Well, it is easier. I mean, there's things.
And then I thought the minor I got on the roller was unfair. So that's because I didn't look behind me before I moved off. But considering I backed up a cul-de-sac, I thought, well, there's nothing behind me, so I didn't bother.
Why did you learn to drive a steamroller?
Well, for the, you know, all the community charity stuff. So yes, I can. You need
special license.
You need a special license, but it's not specifically a steamroller license. On the back of an English driving test, it's a G series, which is you can drive any road rolling piece of equipment.
That's fantastic.
But it's considered cheating in the steam movement if you do it on a diesel roller.
I have a license to drive Huskies. And reindeer.
Useful.
It is useful if you're in northern Finland in the winter.
You actually need a license for that, though.
I think it's just a gimmick that you got when you paid them to do their little reindeer safari, as they called it. But I was given a reindeer herding license.
Lipton, okay. Do you have any driving qualifications?
No, I'm not interested in driving.
Good man.
So driving is the kind of thing that one's parents and one's Finnish wife should do.
Yeah, Lipton and I like to be driven. We don't do the driving.
Yeah, rich people are always driven.
You don't drive, buddy.
Nope.
But you live in the country. Wouldn't it be useful to drive?
I have a bicycle.
She has a power-assisted bicycle.
And a pair of legs.
Ed, I have a point to make about assimilation.
Yeah.
Assimilation is quite a superstitious concept because I judge assimilation based on the ability of an immigrant to assimilate into the intellectual culture of the country. For example, if you attend the Edinburgh Association of Philosophers, you are not likely to see immigrants. Immigrants rarely assimilate into the intellectual aspect of the culture. When I was in Glasgow and I went to these events, I didn't see immigrants.
Yeah, that's do they assimilate into the civic culture? Well, they do into the civic culture. I mean, they take over the Labour Party and stuff. So there's
they might speak English, but they don't join what we call associational life. They're not intellectually Western, so they come here and they make money, but they're not going to join the Adam Smith Society or the Thomas More Society. No.
I think you risk confusing the Labour Party with an intellectual association.
It's not exactly.
It used to be the Labour movement and the trade union movement used to organise all kinds of education for the working class and stuff like this.
When the next leader's Angela Rayner, I think that reputation will be finally finished.
Hey, did you hear what happened to this college boy in the UK? Some girl called him a wannabe Jew and he insulted her and she's a Muslim and he was suspended.
Yes, I did hear about that. Well, that neatly segues us into something else, but I was going to look at that after the, you know, after the middle bit.
I thought it was going to be more detail than that, but apparently not.
Oh, so what do you want to say? But Alex?
Oh, no, I was going to say, I thought they would need some a bit more detail than, did you hear that thing about some guy at college? But no,
Alex, have you watched this program before?
No, Alex, no. Let me tell you what happened. The girl called him a wannabe Jew, and he basically insulted her dress in her attire, and he was suspended. That's all.
Well,
nothing else.
She should have known better. She was obviously baiting him.
She was obviously baiting him. Sorry, what does that mean?
What, baiting?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Her baiting.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was something.
He should have just stripped her in accordance with their customs.
Did you see the video online? The Swedish journalist was in a Swedish journalist was in some country, some Muslim country, and the children were stoning her for not dressing like a Muslim woman.
Well, quite right. Wow. She didn't go around being haram. They stoned her. What are they supposed to do? No. I think we could all agree that when it comes to striking women, the stick should be no wider than their thumb, and it should only be very, very, very sparingly. I believe
Sean Connery said open hand only and no permanent marks.
Sometimes they get hysterical. So what can you do?
Did you say you wanted to keep this video up?
Yeah, I did.
It's going quite well.
It's going quite well. I don't think no. I think it was Alex that brought up the issue of thrashing women, and you developed it,
and the video doesn't go up.
The video will be fine. They all know it's all harmless banter, Martin.
I actually get the Nobel Prize for intelligence. I have discovered the riddle of intelligence. There's a paper by this guy from Europe. This paper is about social intelligence.
And then narrow it down, Lipton? Just don't say Europe. It's a bit racist.
He's from Europe. So the European writer was saying
Yeah,
that
from what country? Europe's a big place.
I don't think
his name is Jonathan.
That's his name. I can't pronounce his last name.
But which country is he from?
Okay, since you insist, I don't know why you insist, but since you insist.
Well, it's like me saying there was this paper by this black guy.
Probably Norway, because he's an associate professor in Norway, so probably he's from Norway.
Okay, brilliant.
This Norwegian European, I like to read it. So he said, look, the social model of intelligence, that's the best explanation to show how human intelligence was enhanced. So I said, brilliant. If socially complicated societies built impersonal institutions, centralized states were literate and innovated, then there could be a relationship between historic complexity and modern day intelligence. I don't know the exact causal mechanisms yet, but it's from coal winters to people cooperating, the institutions to IQ.
So that's farming's probably quite
yes.
Farming. Yeah, adoption of farming. Right, okay. Everyone be quiet till I finish this. We're about halfway through, so that those of you new, hello, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're our online public house, which is on Monday, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss based science, based research, stuff that's increasingly expunged from what's going on in the news, and stuff that's increasingly expunged from our woke joke universe. If you're new, will you please subscribe? Would you subscribe on YouTube? And when you subscribe, and leave a like and share it and all that stuff for the algorithm. And also subscribe to my Substack. That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the base stuff I can't put on YouTube, where I put in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make, writings and stuff. And wherever you like what I do, you can support me the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have Jolly Muller Gimps, who is otherwise known as Dr. Paul Taylor. And he has a channel called Readers of the Lost Art, which I'm supposed to be going on to talk about the Bible, but again, the invitation has not been forthcoming. So could you please subscribe on Readers of the Lost Art? And Paul has various interesting books, which are available on the old Amazon. So go and look over there. Below then we have Mr. Lipton Matthews, our Jamaican researcher. Someone was saying earlier that I'm being politically correct, and Lipton's on here because he's black. It's not true. He's on here. So could you please subscribe to his channel? That's Lipton Matthews, where he gets all kinds of interesting people, and he has various books on Amazon, and he's working on an interesting one which I look forward to reading. Incontinent Jay in Texas says Reads of the Lost Art is the best channel on YouTube. There you go, boy. You've got a real fan there. And then finally, we have our special guests today, our couple guests, and that is Alex and Birdie. So could you, I don't know, did they have a channel? Where can they find you online and support you and stuff, Alex?
I do have a very small YouTube channel. There's about 6 videos on it. Just search Alex Masters, I think. Or find me on Twitter, @A2_Masters. Alex, that Steam guy. Pretty easy to find. Pretty engaged at the moment. desperately trying to defend the civil service from the joke right.
But Birdie, you used to do Woman's Hour and stuff. Whatever happened to Woman's Hour and stuff?
Women happen to Women's Hour.
Women happen to Women's Hour. Ed, I'm not sure if you've ever tried to get a group of women in the same room. It's worse than herding cats. Yeah, it got too difficult. Basically, we were all too busy, and it just stopped happening. And I got
I'll tell you what happened, because there's two kinds of women on the based right. There's the ones that are basically reasonably mentally stable, and just go into the based right because they want to find a based man. And then there's the insane ones there's the e-girls that were attention seeking and probably have borderline personality disorder.
No, I don't want to name names. I'll just start a flame war.
You just did name something. I don't know why you had to know. I don't think she's necessarily the best example, but okay, if you say so. Jess, if you're watching, I don't necessarily agree with Alex. So then the three of you that were on there when I interviewed you a couple of years ago have all settled down with blokes and don't vote, and so it's all gone okay. But anyway, good. So subscribe there. So follow Alex then, Alex Masters on the old Twitter. Okay, we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, Mr. Quinn. And he has sent in the following poem for your delectation and delight, but he sent it in a bit earlier, so I'm going to have to scroll down. Here we go, I've got it. Okay, so Mr. Quinn says, if Finland is really high trust, then visiting's really a must. Their beautiful tongue can sound like it's sung. I'm thinking it's Oulu or Bust. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. And please subscribe to Mr. Quinn's YouTube channel, which is probably called Resident Poet Jolly Heretic. And Mr. Quinn has a book of Jolly Heretic poetry, which is available on Amazon. So go over there and buy that. Okay, we have a super chat from Sensible Centre. And he says, have you seen The Capture, new BBC? I will start. No, I don't watch television. Paul, have you seen The Capture, new BBC?
No, I only watch Korean dramas on Netflix.
Excellent. So, no.
Watch BBC.
No, and Alex and Birdie?
I have seen the Twitter reaction to it today. No, I have not seen the actual drama, but I won't.
What the hell is it? What is it?
It seems to be this month's Adolescence. So the BBC have done a drama series, some sort of crime thriller thing with a sort of grayscale filter in it. But they're going after this right-wing extremist because he did he made 9 Freedom of Information requests to the Home Office, which obviously gets the security services involved. And there seems to be another clip where the episode ends with him pointing a sniper rifle at a boatload of migrants.
Which is a child?
He actually puts his crosshairs on a baby.
Of course he does.
Yeah. So and people have already said he's got sort of short brown hair and a beard, so he looks like Lewis Blackpool from Restore UK.
Let's talk about that. I hadn't heard about that. That sounds interesting. So what you're saying is that, as I seem to recall, it was Tony Blair. And Tony Blair brought in the Freedom of Information Act. And he actually said it was the thing he really regretted. And why would you regret that? You regret that because it means you can be held to account, and you can be held to account by anybody. And I did read an article earlier, actually, that they're thinking of trying to restrict the extent to which you can pursue the Freedom of Information Act because too many people are doing it. So basically, then they've passed a law. They can't get rid of that law because it would look bad. So the solution is what? To make a film that smears people as weirdos if they are sceptical of the government.
Yes. Yes, we're very much in the late stages of empire now, where merely distrusting the state puts you on a list. There were all sorts of like little linguistic cues as well in it. So obviously the guy had been he'd lost his account on 4chan owing to making some derogatory video about migrants. Then somebody pointed out you don't actually have an account necessarily on 4chan. They also, you know, it was illegal and irregular migration. So all the good sort of, you know, state civil service lingo was in there, and him disagreeing with it was cause for concern and got him pursued by the security services.
That's I should watch this. This is really, really, is it on Netflix or BBC? They said BBC.
I think it's on the BBC. I'll bring it up on...
So the way he said, the guy, the questioner said BBC. So that's absolutely fascinating. So the idea is now that the cat's out of the bag, as it were, with regard to the Freedom of Information Act. So you have to convey propaganda to say that if you question the state and you're sceptical of the state and the power of the state, then you're probably a bit dodgy. There must be something wrong. Why would you do that? What's wrong with you? Aren't you with us? Aren't you with us? Aren't you in the same? We're all in the same boat, struggling to get on. You're questioning our wise government.
Ed, I think you're being very cynical, given that approximately 95% of all terrorist threats are from the far right, and since for decades now, the far right has run grooming gangs in northern cities. I think it's outrageous what you're saying.
When I was in the UK, a police officer, for various reasons, asked me who I was because we were filming, and I refused to give her my name. And she said, oh, that's very evasive. And I thought, well, first of all, you stupid lower middle class woman, you don't know what the word evasive means, do you?
Exactly.
You stupid bitch. It's like when I was at an airport a while ago, someone
said, that was abusive.
He isn't entitled to put your bag on the rollers that put it through to the machine. I said, you don't mean entitled, you mean obliged.
Yeah.
Stupid imbecile. So it was that kind of level, you know, IQ 100.
Ed, this is from the man who didn't know what baited meant.
No, I was trying to make it into a sort of sexual joke, but it didn't really work.
Oh, Ed, I was going to say to you, so last night I was reading the piece by Jonathan, and I was also reading a piece on slavery by Gavin Wright. And I wanted to retrieve this old article on the French colonial empire. So I was just doing a lot of reading. I know I'm on a tangent, but I'm talking about what I did yesterday. So during the context of all this reading, I said, do you know what? I feel like doing an IQ test. So I went to do an IQ test. And then I had to pay to get the results. And I said, usually I don't do this. It's a cheap test, but I have a PayPal account and the cost was like £0.5, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I got the result and it was an easy IQ test. It was easy. I should have done better, but my score was not good at all, Ed. It was not good.
Oh, well, I didn't. So, Birdie and Alex, so what's the matter?
You're not going to ask him the score.
What was the score?
121, that was not good. It was an easy test.
No, you're clever than that. 121 is the science teacher.
Yeah, that's good.
Anyway, sorry, what was it, Alex, buddy?
No, I was just...
I found
it on iPlayer, because we've got iPlayer so we can watch Saturday Kitchen and Garden as well. and that's literally it. Oh, and old episodes of The Good Life.
Yeah.
Because it turns out we are at the...
Felicity Kendall.
Yeah. The synopsis at the top, don't believe what you see. In the terrifying world of deep fake technology, just who is pulling the strings? Conspiracy thriller starring Holiday Grainer and Papa Esidu. So it's very much in the line of what Jacinta Ardern said during COVID, which is the internet is all fake, so the only people you can trust is the state.
Right, okay, yeah, which makes a great deal of sense.
And she's emigrated to Australia.
Yeah. Does that count?
She just left New Zealand. Yeah,
I thought she emigrated.
New Zealand's not Australia, is it?
Well,
no.
No, it's probably further than it is from here to Romania.
Yeah, I always think it's about the size of the Channel, but it's not. It's actually quite a long
way. It's not like going to the Isle of Man, Alex.
Yeah.
There's no hovercraft between Australia and New Zealand. It doesn't work. It's not like the Isle of Wight. You've got to. It's a seriously long plane journey, as I understand it, of about 5 hours or something ridiculous like that. So yeah, it's a long way away. But right, okay, so I see. So that's the new point. I mean, that is frightening, though. That's the level that we're at. The idea that there's something wrong with you if you don't trust the government. When a lot of our laws are based around, or they used to be, based around the assumption that you shouldn't trust the government. The reason that we have things like double jeopardy was so a tyrannical government can't just keep prosecuting you again and again and again and again and again. That's why it was a good thing. Because if a tyrannical government will, it's a bad thing in that you used to get, you know, murderers would get off and then immediately go to the newspaper and say, yeah, I murdered him. Yeah, yeah. And that would happen. That did happen. But the positive was better. Double jeopardy, very important. And of course, Labour got rid of it. Yeah. As the beginning of jury trials, which was again a insurance policy against corrupt judges in an overmighty state. So get rid of it. So yeah, the idea that you should trust the government is extraordinary. That you should.
Yeah, but Ed, imagine if you found yourself on trial and David Lammy was in the jury. You'd be crying for a judge's trial.
If there were 12 David Lammys in the jury, or 12 David Lammy-like creatures, then you can see that would be, you would want the impartiality of a judge, unless that judge was also David Lammy or Diane Abbott. When I was at the Lotus Eaters the other week, they had a copy of Diane Abbott's autobiography, and I was having a quick flick. It's actually quite well written. I presume it goes.
What's it called? Where's My Other Shoe?
No, it had some pretentious kind of title.
Was it My Struggle?
My Struggle to Find My Other Shoe.
Mein
Kampf Schuhen.
She did talk about being beaten when she was a child by her father, but I just thought, well, fair enough. Like,
Who wasn't?
Would you explain if it's Diane Abbott? If Diane Abbott was your daughter, I mean, what else can you do? I mean, she's obviously going to be mouthing it off and stuff and saying stupid things.
That does lead credence to my theory that most politicians weren't bullied enough at school.
Yeah.
You know, they were bullied just enough that they got a vendetta against the world. They weren't bullied enough that they were actually mentally broken and then went to a proper job.
Not me.
Yeah, but you never wanted to be a politician.
So, Birdie, were you bullied too much at school or not enough?
Quite substantially.
Oh, no.
Too much or not enough? Which one was it?
But you're still speaking to Alex. That's quite generous of you.
I have a problem.
What could they bully you about? That's outrageous. Goodness me.
You were too pretty, weren't you?
Okay, sure. We'll go with that.
Graham Linehan told me he was bullied at school because he was tall, which I found strange. I would have thought you'd be bullied because you were short. But
it might have been before puberty set in.
Or it might have been that he went to a school of leprechauns. Yeah.
No, he was very tall, prepubescent.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, maybe. Yeah, we had a boy at school like that called, I won't name him, but he was very tall, prepubescent, and very, well, he wasn't even prepubescent. I mean, he was very early pubescent. So it was weird. And he did that thing where he was really tall when he was 11. And then now he's about 6 foot. Like everyone else has kind of caught up with him. So, but when he was, you know, when he was 11, he stuck out.
I love this program, Ed. And it's anecdotes like that keep me coming back every week.
I know. I mean, the brilliance. I've shared some information from my childhood. It's bonded. And from there, Anyway, look, let's move on. Should we look at Leeds University corruption, German 11-year-olds, teacher sacked? What do you think?
Is that all one story?
No, separate stories. Three separate stories.
Three separate stories.
Okay, I'll go for Leeds. So one of the things that I noticed when I was a postgraduate was that the people like me that were postgraduates, that were British, they'd had to do, and they'd gone straight from a bachelor's degree to a PhD, had to do really well. They'd had to do really, really, really well in their degree. You know, they'd had to get excellent references, whatever, right? This was the case with us British people. And I noticed that the Scottish, specifically Scottish, students that were there were very intelligent and whatever. And then you had these postgraduates that were from other places, like America, and were paying, very high tuition fees, whereas the Scottish people didn't pay any fees. If they were British, they might pay, I don't know, £2,000 or £3,000. These people were paying £12,000. And their standards were rather lower for those people. And I knew one person who is a friend of mine, and he is quite intelligent, but he got in with qualifications that no Scottish person would have got in with. Like, he went to a Bible college in America and had a bachelor's degree.
Jesus!
Hey?
You told us this story already.
No, I haven't. And I couldn't...
Not this week.
No, it's not been germane to the news. And what's been found...
Oh, we got germane and we're playing germane bingo.
We're playing the germane card. Yes. So at Leeds University, for some reason, you need to have 3 A's at A level to do a degree in politics, which is insane. It's Leeds University. And why would you need 3 A's for anything at Leeds University?
Because 3 A's aren't what 3 A's used to be, Ed. When you got your results, you know, things have started going downhill. But 3 A's today, you're getting them off the back of a cornflakes packet.
Well, it's not even the top grades, is it? Because you can get A-stars at A-level now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so A-star is the new A. So fair enough. Fair enough. If you see it like that, then yeah. Okay,
no, A-star is the old
Alex,
C.
Alex, Paul is the smartest person on the show. Paul is really smart.
Thank you, Lipton.
Yeah.
Paul once gave Lipton £20 for saying that, and Lipton gave
him... No. Paul is really smart.
Best £20 I've ever spent.
ever since he's intellectually treated by Lipton. Whenever.
That was even better value for money than the £20 I spent one dark November night behind Piccadilly train station, I tell you. Oh, memories.
Intellectual fellatio for the rest of your life. I mean, you know, that's £20 worth paying. Anyway, what they found was that at Leeds University, apparently it's 3 A's, which I assume in my day means 3 B's. To do a politics degree, whereas if you're an international student and you're paying higher tuition fees, then they just let you in with like 2 C's and a D or something equivalent.
No, Keir Starmer went to Leeds.
Yeah, and Martin Croxall.
Who's that?
That one that said the word birth givers or something. She went women like that or something, and it was controversial at the time. That's Martin Croxall, that is. And Vernon Scannell went to Leeds, the poet. And
who's the woman who's now works for the Free Speech Union? She's doing very well.
She's
brilliant because she got driven out from Leeds for saying women don't have todgers, the outrageous nature of her statement. And I'm really glad she's doing well for herself.
Well, she's been on my show about 3 times.
Despite being on your show, she's doing really well for herself.
Yeah, exactly. yes, she did philosophy at Leeds, did Connie. I hope her name's Constance, though, not Connie.
Nothing is Connie.
I don't like that. No, it should be Connie. It should be the short form for Constance. Anyway, where were we? So basically, it's corruption in higher education, and you can get in with lower grades if you're foreign and pay more money. So it just underscores the fact that higher education is completely and utterly corrupt and awful, Paul. You used to work there. You were senior lecturer there.
Yeah, worse than that. It's the, let's say, a very large country in the East where your dog might not be safe. And... from the dinner table, and it's outrageous. The MA system was completely corrupted. I was momentarily, it lasted a very short period of time, I became head of an MA program, and I tried to institute radical things like they're not allowed to do presentations that last 5 minutes that are 30% of their mark. They have to write an actual essay. I was stopped, so I resigned from being the MA person because I just couldn't deal with foreign students who weren't up to it. This took ages for all this to occur. I was then teaching an undergraduate class, and I was asked, would I take some MA students on the third year undergraduate class? And I said no, and they said, why not? And I said, because they couldn't handle the material. And the response was, okay, that's fine. So the management admitted to my face that the students weren't capable of undergraduate work, yet they were getting MA degrees. So explain that one to me.
Yes, it's just corruption.
Corruption.
I remember invigilating an exam, and it was a massive exam hall. I mean, hundreds of students in it, and there was five invigilators. And I started, and I had to get up and do the little speech, you know, starting the exam. And then I said, okay, and off you go. And then these Chinese people, they started getting dictionaries out and putting them on their desks. And I said, hang on, wait, stop. What, this is not, you don't have to have books with you. What is this? And so I prevented that. I said, no books. Like, what? And then I was told later that technically I was right, they overlook it with the Chinese. You know, the Chinese are allowed to take dictionaries into the exams and things like this. Although they couldn't, I was technically correct in what I'd done, but, you know, I was being very strict.
Well, I gave a guest lecture and I walked down the aisle and asked a Chinese student to please put down her mobile phone. And the other, the program leader was in the room and she said, I'm not on my mobile phone, whilst it was in her hand turned on. And he told me to stop picking on her.
Oh my God.
My turn to speak.
Is it?
Do you
go on,
know
Lipton, go for it.
That Chinese students cheat at high rates?
Yeah, it's endemic in China.
Yes.
And when they tried to clamp down on it in China, there was an uproar.
Yeah, it's not even necessary that they cheat. They just don't understand the concept of individual work. Because I remember being at uni back in the early 2010s, and you see the Chinese students in class, and they come in as a unit, and they wouldn't really pay attention to the lecturer, and then they'd all go out as a unit. And I know there's been stories of, you know, essentially all, you know, there'd be 10 Chinese in a class, and they'll all get together and write an essay collectively, and then they'll just turn in 10 copies of it.
Yes.
Yes, I knew a student, a master's student, when I was a PhD student at Aberdeen University. She lived with my wife, and she
lived.
No, well, it was student housing, wasn't it? And she
but not
was,
lived.
Not in the biblical sense, no.
All right, I'm just asking.
You couldn't do that in the biblical sense.
Just trying to jazz up your story a bit, Ed. I'm trying to help you.
There was no jazz. But anyway, she could barely speak English, this woman. And then she presented to me very proudly this essay that she'd done, which was brilliant English and was excellent. And I was like, well, obviously you've paid someone to do that. There was a thing at the time, I don't know if they have it now, they probably don't have it now, called essay mills, where you could pay people to write your essays for you. And I'm sure that was going on as well. They wouldn't learn English because they would just hang around with other Chinese people all the time. So their English wouldn't develop while they were there.
No.
They'd live with Chinese people and they'd, you know. So, yeah, utterly corrupt.
Down further.
Appalling. Okay, that's that. Birdie, any thoughts?
Another based comment. I never went to university. No, I've seen it when I was in college. I did see it even then with groups of Chinese wandering around with each other. And they were always in groups. I never saw one on their own, which always weirded me out because it wasn't anything I was used to.
And if you ever try to interact with the group, they think you're weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. No, the Chinese are quite... I like to read Chinese history. Whenever I'm online and I see an article on the Great Divergence pertaining to China, I read it. I like Kent Deng and Debian Ma. But the Chinese are quite unusual. They're this old book written by an American intellectual. His name is Arthur Smith, not Arthur Young. Arthur Smith, he wrote the book, The Characteristics of the Chinese.
I like a good Chinese history book. The problem is you feel like another one half an hour later.
I like the fact their first, is it the first of the Shang Emperors, is a chap called Yu the Engineer. And that's a good thing.
Isn't there a bloke in one of the few famous Bulgarians, and even he's not that famous, or someone like Boris the Alphabetician?
Ivan Oktobolikov.
Are you a Berlin, Alex? Are you a Chinese meal couple or an Indian meal couple?
Yeah, in fact, we had one fairly recently, didn't we?
What, when we had a park up?
No, we came back from church, didn't we? We were in Truro and we had a Chinese.
Oh, yeah.
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 You're a Chinese meal couple.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes.
I don't think anyone's ever looked at the correlates about being a Chinese or an Indian meal couple, because most people are an Indian meal couple, most people. But then some people, I'd say
an Indian is for a special occasion, but a Chinese is for when you fancy a takeaway.
No. In my family, we just didn't eat Chinese food.
Really?
And I know a number of families that are the same. I didn't even try. My dad didn't like it. So I didn't even try. I think I had Chinese food once on holiday in about 1986 in Dorset, and didn't like it. And then again, I didn't have it again until I was a student. And then
my parents never did.
Was the Chinese food in the '80s? Was it just chicken balls and chips?
No, it was some sort of weird. I know what it was, but I didn't like it.
Chicken balls are tiny as well.
Yeah, well, chickens aren't gonna have balls, are they? They're tiny.
Yeah,
yeah.
The sweet and sour sauce is quite good though.
But then I was introduced to it. But there was people at Durham University who were very middle class and stuff, and so they were into Chinese food. And so then I was introduced to Peking Duck and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and went through. I think it's quite
interesting because in almost every in every English town and city, there's umpteen Chinese and Indian places. Because obviously we had India in the Empire, and we also had Hong Kong, so they're all over the place. But when I lived in Europe, both were seen as quite novel. I remember being in Belgium, and there was one Indian restaurant, and it was a sort of really high end place because it was very odd for there to be an Indian family in Belgium, and it was all it was all served in little karais, and it cost an absolute fortune.
Mm. Yeah, so we were very similar to you, Ed. I never had it growing up because, again, growing up in the countryside, it wasn't convenient. You had to drive into town. They never delivered. They don't deliver here either. They never delivered where I grew up, and they don't deliver here either. So it was a very, very rare thing to have it. I only really started having it when I met you.
Yes,
to be honest.
I quite like the rudeness of the service.
Very blunt.
Well, yeah, it's quite sycophantic in Indian restaurants sometimes, but the Chinese know how to throw a bowl in front of you. Just reminds me of home.
It's like the opposite of Americans. Customer service.
Yeah.
But that's why I think, why isn't there the concept of a Somali takeaway? I mean, it's basically kind of Indian food mixed with Italian food.
Because they spend all their time taking away benefits. They don't have time to create restaurants.
Like, why isn't there, there's a Nepalese restaurant in Oulu. It's great. It's the best restaurant in the world. Honestly, it's fantastic. But there's a few Indian restaurants. And there's loads of Chinese restaurants, but there isn't a Somali, whereas we all like the Somali. Right, we're going to move on then, Paul. So this Germany, 11-year-olds singing Ausländer Raus.
That's a war crime.
I like the idea that the rebellion, the reaction against being brought up by crazy people, is that severe? By the way, if you're watching and you're in Germany, join me at the Witan in the GDR. I don't know if I'm allowed to say where it is in the GDR, but it's in the GDR at the end of the month. I should be speaking at the end of the month at the Witan in the GDR, and the title of my speech will be, "I would like to apologise for the behaviour of my nation during the war." So please
watch Fawlty Towers to prepare.
Well, Harry Enfield, really. Please watch the Jürgen sketch in Harry Enfield, which I may well perform for your delectation and delight. By performing, I will prove that Germans have a sense of humour.
That's a challenge.
No, they do. They do. Don't let's be beastly to the Germans. Right. So, Paul, you sent me this. So, what are your thoughts on this? Why is this happening?
Well, if you can only gaslight people for so long, and the children are the future, to quote that famous political philosopher, it is a case that I just think Germans, you'll know more about this than I do, but Germans on the ground are seeing things change. They're seeing women, security on the downward slope. So many things are happening. Merkel played an absolute nightmare with her stupid virtue signalling, completely opening the borders. And guess what? It's the Germans don't need encouragement to be xenophobic. And I think it's coming out the woodwork again. But for completely understandable reasons, because the technocrats in charge are completely irresponsible, and it's true over most of Europe. We're all going to have to emigrate to Poland at this rate.
The Poles weren't like that. The Poles.
Well, we might get away with it if we learn Polish quite quickly. The Hungarians and the Poles seem to be the only ones prepared, you know, not to just watch their countries die.
Yeah, true. Lipton.
What do I think? Let me tell you what I'm thinking about. During after World War II, Americans, the British, Europeans and North Americans, they basically expropriated German technologies, even technologies that were produced by German entrepreneurs. And I think that German entrepreneurs and possibly even the German state might be due reparations. That's what I think.
Fair enough.
I have an article on it.
Can I just clarify, Lipton? You're saying the Germans should be paid reparations?
Yeah, German entrepreneurs. People don't know, but I'm not being funny. I'm serious, Paul.
Lipton, you're funniest when you're being serious.
Read John Gimpel and some other academics. During the post-World War II period, Europeans and Americans, they expropriated German technology, and they even expropriated technologies that were created by German entrepreneurs.
Lipton, I might give you that, but in the context of the 1940s, do you think that's the worst thing that might have happened?
Not at all.
I'd counter that with the fact that...
There was this writer, Albert J. Nocke, wrote a book, The Myth of the Guilty Nation, it was about Germany. So the Germans are always being blamed for creating wars.
So again, can I clarify, 1939, the UK invaded Sudetenland.
Oh, you boomer. You boomer.
I'm sorry. I am a boomer. I've obviously missed the revisionist history.
Explain it to me. Oh, the Germans made the Sudetenland.
Germans. Yeah, just trying to create a safe home for all Germans. How dare they?
Yeah, still Germans.
Yeah.
Do you know how mean they were to the Germans in the Sudetenland? They were really mean.
What, they made fun of Bratwurst and all sorts?
Yeah. You know why there's no Sudeten Germans anymore? But that's something we don't talk about.
Yeah, yeah. And the Poles under General whatever his name was, Sokolowski or whatever his name was, that was a very nasty dictatorship, Poland. And they were extremely unkind to the Germans that lived there and hurt their feelings, Paul.
But to be fair to Lipton, I do think if you take the whole of the 1930s and 40s into account, the worst crimes against humanity were the stealing of intellectual property rights. I think that's a very strong argument.
Yes.
There's a joke in there, but I'm not going to make it because Ed wants his stream kept up.
I'm just trying to find my brilliant book on this. Here's my brilliant book. Here it is. Churchill's Headmaster, The Sadist Nearly Saved the British Empire, which I'll be talking about when I'm in the GDR. I've got a huge amount of information in this. On they were very appalled. They said hurtful things to them. They had like anti-German days. They were very unkind. What could the Führer do realistically? What could he do?
And particularly post-war, you know, what happened to the Germans living in Poland and East Prussia as that became a Russian enclave, and of course the Volga Germans and people like that. Yeah.
Just to clarify, Alex, was that after the war?
Yes.
Yeah. So there was, in contact, there was absolutely nothing they'd done to have any, you know, to instill any sense of revenge in the other people.
Two wrongs don't make a right, do they?
Tautologies, schmaltologies.
Oh, Czechoslovakia, which was 48% Czech, 28% German, 14% Slovak, was similarly unpleasant to its German minority, the Sudeten Germans, placing Germany's 1938 invasion of Sudetenland in a rather different light. The Czech-dominated government forced all administrations schooling in the Sudetenland to be in Czech, against treaty guarantees to the contrary, shut down all the German schools, gave all towns and streets Czech names, expropriated land from Germans to give it to Czechs. If the land hadn't been held by Germans since before 1620, it was restored to the Czech people.
What's your point?
Well, that's just, you know, it's outrageous behaviour towards the Sudeten Germans.
That's the kind of ethnic cleansing and, you know, plantation that just you wouldn't You, that wouldn't get through the European Court.
No way, Jose.
No. So that, you know, there was obviously after the fall of the Soviet Union, actually the Germans were asked if they wanted Königsberg back, and they went, "Well, not really, because they're all ethnic Russians."
I said, "Well, why?" In October, November 1930, the Polish government held a special anti-German week, which resulted in widespread mistreatment of Germans. Propaganda posters openly incited violence against German minority, or portrayed a German as a fat, helmeted, beer-swilling Prussian held back by a slim Polish knight who encouraged Poles to repeat the scenes of Grunwald. This being the place where the Poles routed the Teutonic Knights in the 15th century battle. German shops were boycotted, German newspapers publicly burnt, and Germans were attacked in the street with the police rarely intervening.
Terrible.
I think, Ed, I think the fact you're quoting from your own book means you've lost the argument.
No, it doesn't. because that I cite Demchuk 2012, pages 47 to 49.
Right, well, I'm going to get a copy of Viz off the shelf and quote back at you.
Well, as a person that's purchased every single Viz since 1998 and has them in this room now, I can easily quote Viz at you. I mean, which I bet you couldn't. You actually couldn't do. I'm perfectly happy. So, if you want a Viz quoting competition, Paul, I will win.
I will channel the fat slags.
28 years. You will channel the fat slags, who weirdly are from Mansfield, not from Newcastle. One of the weird quirks about the fat slags. Very unsuccessful film. They made a film, didn't they, about 25 years ago about the fat slags.
You're kidding.
Yeah, they made a fat. Google it. You'll find it on YouTube probably. Fat Slags, the movie.
What could possibly go wrong?
It was very, very unsuccessful. Are you familiar with the fat slag?
No, I'm not, actually. That must be a northern thing.
Well, in Lipton's case, it wouldn't even be. It'd be like a documentary.
Well,
yeah,
Lipton likes Anne
Widdecombe. Yeah, you like it. Did you know that Alex and Birdie? Lipton's a bit of an Anne Widdecombe fan.
Yes,
Alex and Birdie. You obviously haven't heard of it.
That like the Beano for Northerners?
No, it's the Beano for adults. It's a grown-up comic. Right. This is from January 2025, I think this must be. I'm just saying the fat slags are in it. They're probably in it. But it's very, very good. It's really, really good fun.
Paul, when my book is out, will I be interviewed on your show?
If you can go back in time and publish it before 1920, yes, Lipton.
No, it's a really simple book, just over 200 pages.
I don't do contemporary literature because it's all
it's
rubbish.
It's
gotta be old and past it, like me.
My non-fiction book.
It's the Mail Online is quite a good character, even though it's satirizing people like us, or at least me and Alex. It's quite a good character. I'm not seeing
that.
Real Ale Twats is also very good. It's become a bit. Here's the fat slags. Look here, you can see fat slags. Hopefully. But it's become a bit politically correct, though, these days, unfortunately. There's a couple of the people that make the comics that are obviously a bit left-wing, and they promote a sort of left-wing agenda, which is sad.
Yeah, but Ed, to put it in historical context, the fat slags in Viz was in an era where about less than 20% of the population was morbidly obese and sexually incontinent. Now no one who's young has sex, and everyone is morbidly obese. Yeah. So,
Paul is so funny. I love Paul. He's so funny.
I love you, Lipton. That's the best £20 I ever spent. But Ed, do you get my point? Morbidly obesity has got to such levels that fat slag stops being funny.
Well, yeah, it's true. If you go to God bloody hell, I was in Bridge End. In about 20 years ago, and me and my wife went into the Tesco in Bridge End, and just everybody in it was a fatty. And I don't mean like a little bit fat. I mean like obese. Everybody. And we went into the Harvester in Bridge End, and likewise, it was amazing.
Well, you know Edward Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the West?
Yes.
Well, I knew that had occurred again when on late night television a few years ago, I saw an advert for chafing cream and it had fat people disco dancing on the spot. And it was like, do your thighs chafe? Buy chafing cream. And these fat people then started smiling because their thighs weren't hurting them anymore.
I guess otherwise they'd have plasters on their thighs.
Yeah, thigh chafage is, I think it's the best test of morbid obesity.
Wow! Any thoughts on this, Alex and Birdie?
Well, I was actually thinking. You know, you say it's a massive problem. Is it just from where we live in the countryside? But there's not an awful lot of truly fat people. There might be one or two in like.
Well, if they are, weeks. Alex, they've stayed at home because they either haven't been hauled by a tractor out the house, or they're too fat to get out and up a hill.
Yeah. Well, no, I had to go out to Bristol last week, and I was on the train back, and as I came through Exeter, it was turfing out time at the college, and a lot of young people came on, you know, they were sort of 17, 18 odd, and there were two girls sat in the seats opposite me, and obviously you can hear them because they're teenage girls, but they were having a discussion about what to have for dinner, and you know, one of them was going to have some roast chicken, and you know, very, very healthy, very good, perfectly all right. And the other one was actually looking forward to a bubble and squeak made with the leftover veg from the Sunday roast with maybe a fried egg on top.
Were they large ladies, Alex?
No, thin and svelte and very nice.
I'm sure.
So I'm confused with the relevance of this.
Yeah, we're talking about fatties, Alex.
There's this idea that young people, you know, eat a lot of crap and processed food.
So in your study, N equals two.
No, there was at least a dozen on that train.
See, I don't think it's young people. I'm going to go opposite you now.
Yeah, the fat people, but sorry to interrupt, Birdie, but the fat people don't go out at night. They're too fat to get in a club. So it's not a representative sample, is it?
Yeah, no. But I don't think it's young people. I work with a lot of young people. I see quite literally over 1,000 people a day. And the ones who are the fat ones are not the young ones. They are mid-40s, usually.
But if you did home visits, don't you think you'd find a lot more fat people lying in bed washing themselves with a rag on the end of a stick?
Yeah. Possibly. Mm. I think it's where we live. Yeah. It's very hilly. So you can't be too fat around here. Because exactly. You actually, you know... It's quite exertion living in the country.
Roll down the hill. Roll down the...
Yeah.
Lipton, what's your ideal weight in a woman?
Well, I'm really skinny. Maybe 95 pounds. I'm really skinny.
No, not you, but you're... Because Anne Widdecombe's not thin.
Well, Anne Widdecombe is not that fat.
She's a bit fat.
She's very fat.
Certainly used to be. I have Anne Widdecombe's autobiography in the upstairs loo,
and it's called Wider Than Tall.
No, it's called Strictly Anne. It's a reference to her being on.
Is the front cover her being dragged across the dance floor by Anton de Berg?
Mm. It's a very boring punk cover of her standing with the countryside behind her. It's quite a good book. It's not as good as like my favourite, like one of the best written. I read quite a lot of this autobiography.
A certain time of the night, Alex and Birdie, the tism sets in, and he goes wandering around in the black cave.
These are my two favourites. They're really well written. They're really, really good. This is maybe the best one. It's called A Different Kind of Weather by William Waldegrave. He's very, very introspective. And biting at his heels is simply John Major, an autobiography. It's excellent. I mean, he tells you so much detail about himself and whatever. And he doesn't mention Edwina Curry, which is a bit of an admission. But otherwise, it was very, very good. I should try to get him on the Jolly Heretic, but I don't think it will happen. All right, chaps, we're going to have to round up now. So I'd like to thank Alex and Birdie for coming on. And I will interview Alex about trains and stuff, I think, about 3 weeks from now.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
Amy
Birdie. Wax, doing, hello, Birdie.
He's made his move, Birdie. He's made his move quite late.
Lipton, calm down. Okay, we will see you all next Monday, and tally ho, and goodbye!
Goodbye!